Hello, this is Ryan George from the thing you're currently watching. Please enjoy this pitch meeting for Home Alone that I made several years ago, and then stick around after because I'm going to talk about it.
While you're doing that, I'm going to draw Joe Pesci.
I was told you had a movie idea for me.
Yes, sir, I do. See, last month my wife and my brother went on vacation together alone.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
No, what? Don't be sorry. They accidentally forgot me at home.
Are you sure that's what happened?
Well, yeah, of course. Why else would they not bring me on a vacation to Paris?
All right, I mean, okay.
And so, you know, I got to be home all alone.
That's great, buddy.
It was great. I ate candy, I watched movies, I went grocery shopping all by myself.
Okay, to be honest, I'm not getting what the movie idea is, and I'm getting a little sad.
Right, so I was thinking, if I'm having such an amazing time, imagine if this happened to an 8-year-old kid.
You want to make a movie where a child's wife cheats on him?
What? No, I want a kid to be accidentally left at home while his family goes on vacation.
I guess my question is, how would that ever happen?
Well, his family leaves on a vacation and they don't realize he's not with them.
Yeah, but okay, it just seems like a really, 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 really improbable thing.
Oh yeah, I'm well aware.
Okay, so?
Well, I was doing some research and there's this thing in storytelling called the suspension of disbelief.
What's that?
They say that the audience sacrifices realism and logic for the sake of enjoyment.
Oh, so the audience will kind of just overlook unrealistic things?
Right, so I think if we exploit that to like an extreme level, we're good.
Huh. Interesting.
So I think I figured out like the perfect storm of unrealistic coincidences to get this premise off the ground.
All right, you got me. I'm listening.
Okay, so first off, the kid has to be part of a huge family. Like, it has to be big enough that you wonder if they've ever heard of birth control. Plus, some uncles and cousins can be there too. They also all have to be really mean to the kid so he can wish that they would disappear. Then they also have to accidentally throw his plane ticket in the trash. Then they also have to make him sleep in the attic so they don't see him when they're leaving. There also has to be a huge storm the night before the departure that knocks out the phone line so they can't contact him when they're gone. That storm also has to knock out the power. That way their alarms can shut off in the night and they wake up late for their flight. Also, the kid needs to sleep so heavily that he doesn't hear 15 people running around and yelling. There also has to be a random little kid that shows up at the exact moment they're doing a head count so they can get it wrong. Then we have to have nobody think of him even a little bit until they're mid-flight.
So they really have to be like an awful family.
They have to be the worst family. Oh yeah, also then the kid has to wake up and think he's magic because he wish that they disappeared and they did.
Wouldn't he just make the connection that they were supposed to leave on a trip that morning?
You'd think so, but if we have him not understand what an airport shuttle is, he can look at their cars and be like, there's no way they could have gotten to the airport without those. So he thinks he magically erased his family from existence?
Right.
So just to be clear, we need to have all those extremely unlikely scenarios play out one after the other just to get this kid alone at home by himself?
That's right.
And this suspension
of disbelief.
Right, with that, people will just be okay with all of that.
Apparently, yeah.
All of that.
Yeah, pretty cool, right?
Well, then awesome.
So tell me more about this kid,
Kevin McAllister. Well, you know how his family is the worst?
Yeah, I imagine he's like the only nice one in the family.
Oh no, he's also the worst.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he calls his mom a dummy and he's really snarky with everyone. He's also unable to pack a suitcase, like it's the end of the world for him to do that.
And how does he get over the trauma of the situation?
The trauma?
Well, I mean, in Kevin's mind, he's essentially just killed his family with a wish. I imagine that's gonna be hard for him to come to terms with.
Actually, super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Really?
Well, I probably should have mentioned before that Kevin is a psychopath.
Oh yeah.
We're talking complete disregard for the physical and emotional well-being of everyone he comes across in his life. And he talks to himself, kind of a lot.
So he's happy that they're dead.
He's thrilled.
He has a little eyebrow celebration thing, and then he does all the exact same stuff I did when I was home alone, except I didn't shave.
Does anything else happen, or do we just watch a kid go crazy at home by himself?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's where things get really interesting.
How's that?
Well, it turns out that two burglars have their hearts set on breaking into the McAllister house.
So why this house in particular?
One of them mentioned something about it probably having some VCRs.
VCRs are great.
And they always will be. So these guys think that the house is empty because they've been casing the joint.
Oh no.
But Kevin finds out that they want to break in.
So he calls the cops?
No. Well, eventually.
Eventually? Why not right away?
Because of the psychopath thing.
Oh.
I don't get it.
Well, the bandits break in, but Kevin is like some kind of genius. Like, he set up a bunch of intricate death traps that they walk into one by one.
But you said the kid was freaked out about packing a suitcase, like that was too much.
Oh, right.
And now he's like a death trap engineer?
Yeah, no, that's a mistake. I'll change the suitcase thing. That doesn't make any sense.
Meh, it's probably fine.
You sure?
Eh.
It's no problem. I could change it to something that makes the whole death trap engineer make sense.
Nah, keep the suitcase thing. It's all good.
Okay, so he's too stupid to pack a suitcase, but he's great at traps.
So what happens with the robbers?
Well, they somehow survive a bunch of very, very fatal injuries.
Wow.
Yeah, and in the middle of the robbery, it seems like they forget that they wanted to rob the house, and now they just want to murder this child.
It becomes about murder.
It seems that way. Because at a certain point, Kevin just leaves them alone in the house, and they don't take anything.
Just focused on the kid, no more VCRs.
Yep, so at the end, they get arrested because they tried to break in and murder a child. It's very dark. And then overnight, he manages to clean up all the traps, including some stairs covered in tar. And then his family comes back the next day and immediately ignore him again.
What do you think?
Well, I think it might have some potential,
but
it's missing something, some kind of big selling point.
Do you have anything in mind?
Well, we could try the Christmas play. I mean, that rarely works, but
what's that?
That's when you make a movie take place at Christmas time, even if it has almost nothing to do with Christmas time.
So people think, oh, this is a Christmas movie. I have to watch it.
Exactly.
Would that work if I just add in a couple of random Christmas elements?
Well, it's certainly not going to be a Christmas classic, but it's worth a shot.
Here you go. See, pesci is the plural of fish in Italian. These are two Italian fish, both named Giuseppe, Joe for short. So,
was that one a bit of a stretch?
No.
So Home Alone was the 8th pitch meeting I ever made, and as you could tell from that, I was still very much figuring things out. This was the first one that takes place significantly in the past, and I remember editing and being like, well, that computer I have doesn't make any sense. So I swapped that out for a computer of that general era, which is a little detail that people have told me that they appreciate. Now, if I want to nitpick, which I do because that's my job, doesn't really make sense that the computer's facing them, and hey, I forgot to remove this wireless keyboard that didn't exist back then, so let's pretend that's a notebook or something. I don't dislike this early pitch meeting. There are a couple of things that I would definitely do differently if I were to remake it today. Like, I like the bit about the screenwriter guy being completely oblivious to the fact that his wife is probably being unfaithful. I think, like, cheerful obliviousness has kind of become the brand over the years. But I do think if I was making this pitch meeting today, I would go heavier on the jokes per minute. There are long stretches in this pitch meeting where there are maybe one or two laughs, and now my style is more just rapid fire. The idea kind of being that if you don't laugh at a joke, there's gonna be another one maybe 3-4 seconds later, so hopefully you'll laugh at that one. That way, I think probably people don't click away as much. Please don't click away. You're all I have. Also, I don't know if I stand by the bit about this not being a Christmas movie anymore. That feels a little gatekeepy. I'm not the gatekeeper of what is a Christmas movie or what isn't. Christmas is the reason why this incredibly rich family are all getting together and going to Paris. Christmas is part of the reason that Kevin believes that his wish to make his family disappear actually worked. He makes a wish to a Santa impersonator later in the movie to get his family back. So he clearly thinks that Christmas magic is involved. Christmas isn't central to the movie. You could still make this movie if it didn't happen at Christmas time, but that doesn't mean it's not a Christmas movie. This is a fine movie to play at Christmas time. Look at this gatekeepy bastard. Stop gatekeeping Christmas movies, you big old jerk. Okay, question time. How do you remain so prolific? I've never seen such a consistent quality humor content from another creator. I'd love to have an idea of what your process is like. How many ideas or scripts do you have on the back burner? Well, first of all, thank you very much for the kind words and for saying that my stuff is consistently funny. That's a very big compliment. I won't call myself prolific because that word feels like I'm tooting my own horn. And there are whole other websites for tooting your own horn on camera. But I do make a lot of comedy videos, and I have been for several years. So one kind of reality checky thing that I'd like to pass along to aspiring creators is that, you know, don't compare your output to people that do this as their full-time job. If you're in school or you have a full-time job or even a part-time job, then you don't have as much time as I do to dedicate to this. So it wouldn't be fair to compare yourself to someone who literally, I could spend 4 hours staring at a blank wall trying to come up with ideas. And that is my job.
For years and years, this wasn't my full-time job, and I had to find the time on nights and weekends to kind of make this kind of stuff to finally make the leap into this being the full-time thing. And obviously my output of stuff was a lot lower back then because I had other obligations. So that's a pretty big reason as to why I'm able to make a lot of stuff, is that this is all I do. As for coming up with concepts and sketches and scripts and stuff, the biggest thing that has helped me over the years is not getting in my own way. When I sit down for a brainstorming session or I'm trying to come up with new ideas, I tell myself I'm going to write 50 bad ideas. That takes a lot of the pressure off and is kind of a defense against writer's block, because writer's block is often caused by the fear that the next thing you write isn't going to be fantastic. But if you're purposefully writing bad ideas, then that doesn't come into play. And invariably, when you write down 50 bad ideas, there's going to be one or two or three or four that are actually not that bad. And then you could kind of just build off of those or just store them as, you know, idea nuggets. I do have a list of like 100 idea nuggets that didn't inspire me in the moment, but sometimes years later, I'm like, oh, yeah, I could see how I could use that now. So if you are looking to write stuff, my advice is to just vomit onto the page and then pick the chunks out. That's gross. Very kind words. And then, hey, what's the process like for getting into your characters? Do you say a few catchphrases for the respective role to get into it, or do you just jump right into it? So usually what I do is before I start recording any line, I just start with a big dumb smile on my face, and that usually gets it going. Hi, this is Mark from the comment you're currently ignoring. Okay, so this is actually a serious problem on YouTube, identity theft. This person says that they're from a comment that we're ignoring, but over 800 people like that, and now I've shared it to several hundreds of thousands of people. So this is not the Mark he's claiming to be. And what can I say? This person's been reported to the authorities, and I hope they spend a long, long time in jail. All right, say goodbye to Joe Pesci. See you next time.